ॐ श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ गणानां नत्वा गणपतिं हवामहे ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आमश्मन्मन्मोतिः श्रीमहागणाधिपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् इत्युदाहृतमाकर्ण्य भगवान् नारदस्तदा प्रीतः प्रत्याहतम् बालम् सद्वाक्यमनुकम्पया. सो नारद महर्षि इस् वेरि वेरि प्लीस्ड् विद् दि पर्सिवियरेन्स् determination and courage of Dhruva. And so, with a lot of compassion, he is telling him, addressing him. Nārada uvācha jananyābhihita panthāha savai nishteya sasyate bhagavān vāsudevastam bhajatat pravanātmanā. If Dhruva wants to accomplish the highest thing in life, then the path is worship of Srihari, worshipping Srihari. That is the path. That was the advice given by his mother. Narada Maharshi is saying, your mother's advice is the best. If you want to accomplish the highest in life, you have to learn to worship Ishvara. How? Tat pravanātmanā. With a mind, ātmā is the mind. With a mind, it is inclined towards Ishvara. You see, we have the mind and the senses. There is the world. From the childhood, we are accustomed to relate to the world with the senses and the mind. This is how we are brought up. That is how the childhood is. And so the childhood, young age, is all about relating to the world with the senses. Occasionally we say God and all that. In fact, in the childhood and young age, God means good food. I think even old age also it seems to be the same. God and good food go together. So that's why people, whenever they go to temple, generally, nowadays the temples are converted into what are called pakashalas. Means where very good food is prepared. This is how it happened. At one time, in our childhood days, temple means there will be teertham and prasadam and some vibhuti will be given. Vibhuti means ashes. What is the prasadam? Ashes. In fact, they sit and make packets of these ashes, small packets. And for anybody who wants the prasadam, give a packet. And what we used to do, open the packet, put the ash on the face and take a small pinch and put in the mouth also. This is what we used to do. But nowadays, temples means laddus, vadai, dosha, chakrapongali, purihora, kattepongali, vatna. They have become pakashalas. Anyway, so mostly we are habituated to relating with the world using the mind and the senses. That is the essence of life. People give big names to that, but that is the essence of life. Relate to the things of the world with the mind and the senses. Now, you have to put an end to it to a large extent. Not altogether, to a large extent. Because altogether putting an end is not possible. Because the body has to survive. Therefore, drink water, eat food. So, roti kapda makan, what they say. So, basic needs of life are taken from the world. Other than that, we are not interested in the world. And then the mental energies are now available. They are conserved. They are not wasted. And these mental energies, mainly mental energy means the love, the enthusiasm, the perseverance. That is what mental energy is. And then, time, availability of time. Once you withhold the sense organs from the mind, from the world, plenty of time is available to you. Now you use all that time and all that mental energy in the worship of Ishvara. This is the path of devotion. And so that is what you have to do. That is the advice given by Narada to Dhruva. Then you can think of accomplishing something real in life. What we accomplish in the world, however glorious they may be, ultimately, any accomplishment of the world, any accomplishment is superficial and transient. Superficial and transient. You see, I was watching a tennis player, a big tennis player, America tennis player. He got 10 or 12 Grand Slam titles. And then he is now losing the game. He became old. Old means 30 itself is old in such games. So he is in 30s and playing. The other guy is very young and upcoming. And so he is hitting the shots and this man is losing the game. And he is crying bitterly. And that means what? What all Grand Slams that he has achieved already, they are all gone into past. They are all gone in time. They could not give him the lasting fulfillment. He has to get one more win, then only he can feel happy for a short while. Anyway, I don't know whether I gave the right example. The principle is, however great an accomplishment may be in the world, it is superficial, means it cannot touch the core of your heart. It is superficial. And it is transient, just will be there for a while. Therefore, that kind of an accomplishment is not an accomplishment at all, really speaking. In a worldly context it may have some value, I am not saying anything against it, but a lasting accomplishment that makes me full, timelessly, not a transient happiness, fullness, timelessly. That is the accomplishment. And that is what is called jivan mukti, freedom. By living in this body, in this life, in this world, you become free from the bondage of samsara and discover your own fullness. That is the real accomplishment, which will never desert the person one more time. Anyway, dharmartha kama mokshakshyam ya icche chreya atmanaha. ఏకమేవ హరేస్తత్ర కారణం పాదసేవనం. దేర్ ఆర్ ఫోర్ పురుషార్థస్. పురుషార్థ ఈజ్ హ్యూమన్ పర్స్యూట్, హ్యూమన్ గోల్, ఎసెన్షియల్లీ ఫోర్. సో యు సీ, పీపుల్ డూ మెనీ థింగ్స్. పీపుల్ దే గో టు హై స్కూల్, కాలేజ్, గెట్ మ్యారీడ్, గివ్ బర్త్ టు చిల్డ్రన్, మేక్ ఎ కెరియర్, మేక్ మనీ అండ్ డూ ఆల్ కైండ్స్ ఆఫ్ థింగ్స్. బట్ in all these actions, the humans have four pursuits. This is how they are reduced. In philosophy, generalizations abound. That is what philosophy is, generalizations. That is the fundamental difference between science and philosophy. In science, it is a overwhelming importance or focus on the details. Of nama and rupa. That is what science is. So a student of science is advised, to focus on every single detail. Minutest detail also should not be missed. That is science, nama rupa. Reductionism, not reductionism, differentiation. Make it differentiation. So like medicine, start with the human body. Then make it smaller. Heart. Heart is just one part of the human body. Some of these cardiologists, suppose you have a headache, they will refer to another doctor. They won't very focused, really. Heart means they don't talk. No, don't come near me. Headache I have. No, don't come here. Go away. Because I belong to heart. And then in heart itself, my God, there may be a dozen disciplines. Like that, more and more and more differentiation. That is how science operates. Whereas in philosophy, you integrate. Take the entire universe, all the phenomena, you take all of them and put them into one category. That is how philosophy operates. Therefore, all the human pursuits are put into four categories. That is what philosophy is. You reduce them into four. So they are dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Briefly speaking, from the childhood, about these four, from the childhood we are accustomed to relate to the world with the sense organs and the mind. And so we want to derive happiness or pleasure from the worldly things. And so that pursuit, a child is there, it wants a chocolate all the time. The first time you make the child taste the chocolate, and it will seek the chocolate again and again and again. So this is what is called kama, means the desire to enjoy, the aspiration to enjoy sense pleasures. That is there in all human beings, coming from childhood, kama. That is the beginning of the human pursuit. A childhood is always out to get some pleasure. And then, eventually, we know that the pleasures cannot come cheap. They don't come free, they don't come cheap. They come costly. And therefore, you need wealth. And therefore, while retaining this pursuit of pleasure called kama, so kama pursuit is retained intact, it is not disturbed. Now one more pursuit is added, that is artha. So that is wealth. Now, while pursuing a desire or while earning money to fulfill the desires, you should not cross the law. There are two kinds of laws, the local laws and the universal laws. If you cross the local law, you will be ticketed. So if you drive the car, it may be a wonderful car, if you drive the car beyond the speed, they will penalize you. That is called dharma, local law. And there are correctional centers, etc. Whenever dharma is violated, why dharma is violated? For the sake of artha or kama. That's why it is violated. Therefore, the local laws punish the people. If he escapes the local laws, quite often one can do that. This is how India functions. Here, the local laws are strictly followed, and it is almost impossible to escape the laws. Whereas, in India, you can escape the local laws, not very big deal. You can easily skip the law. Law is not very powerful there. But then how the society is thriving? Law is almost powerless. How the society is thriving? Society is thriving. May not be as much as Canada or America, but still thriving. That means, still, even today, people fear a higher law. You see, this Russian ambassador or diplomat, he came to India. Russian means US, in those days USSR, so communist man. When he came to India as a diplomat, he was an atheist. But while going away from India, he's atheist. You see, I used to teach yoga. And some of these Russians used to attend. Because these Russian experts who came, India had collaboration with Russians in technology. Hindustan Aeronautics Limited is there. Their Russian experts used to be there. And Indian Drugs and Pharmaceuticals Limited, Russian experts used to be there. And they used to come for yoga. They used to attend yoga classes. I used to take yoga classes and they used to attend. Gita classes also they used to attend. And then I asked them, so now they are going back to Russia. Will you pursue them there? No, we cannot. We'll be arrested and put in jail. We cannot pursue. So they learn yoga in India secretly. Anyway, so the point is, this Russian diplomat, while going back, he declares, there is God. How do you know? India is functioning. That is proof. That is proof that there is God. Because of God alone it is functioning. because the local laws, etc., government, etc., is so ineffective, still the society is functioning. That is God, dharma. Therefore, dharmo dharayati prajah, that reverence for rule of law, for truth, for appropriateness, etc., is still there in the hearts of the people. If we skip, we may as well skip the local law, but the universal law is there. The name Yama you hear. In Purana, Yama means a gentleman sitting somewhere in the southern direction, visiting people at the time of death. That is how Purana. But what is Yama? Yama is the universal dharma. That is called Yama. Yamayati iti Yamaha. It keeps people in the right path. That devotion to dharma. Every heart has the devotion to dharma, because of which people mostly live the path, mostly tread the path of righteousness. That is dharma. Therefore, while pursuing artha and kama, the pleasures and wealth, you are not supposed to break the laws. If you break the laws, you will be punished. So don't break the law. Follow the right path and pursue artha and kama. That is called dharma. And if you pursue dharma, your artha kama pursuits will be blessed. This is dharma artha kama. It is called trivarga. And even while following the life of trivarga, the three purusharthas, you are advised to cultivate devotion to Ishvara. Be devoted to Ishvara. Don't be just devoted to the pleasures, the wealth, and the law. That is the devotion, you know. I enjoy pleasures, I make wealth, and I follow the law. Local law as well as moral law. Clean, that is nice. It's an ethical life. But just don't stop there. You include intense devotion to Ishvara into that ethical life. And then it doesn't stop there. Then comes a stage where the arthakama become irrelevant. You don't pursue arthakama anymore. You see the meaninglessness of it all, or the unsatisfactoriness of it all. That is called vanaprasthashrama. So, pursued arthakama for a length of time, for a long years in life, now he reaches a stage in life called vanaprastha. He is not interested in arthakama anymore. When arthakama becomes redundant, dharma becomes irrelevant. Now, I never drive a car, so for me rules of road rules do not apply, because I don't drive a car at all. Similarly, when someone is not pursuing arthakama anymore, dharma becomes mostly irrelevant. You can still follow dharma, but there is nothing to follow dharma. Dharma becomes very relevant when you are pursuing wealth and pleasures. And now you transcend the three in one go and arrive at a stage where the pursuit is that of moksha. Total freedom from all dependence on the things of the world, here and hereafter. That is the moksha. Very simple. You become totally free from the world, the outside, the outer, here and hereafter. Free from birth and death also. Free from all opposites like pleasure and pain. That is the freedom. This freedom is moksha. Now that becomes the goal. Moksha becomes a goal only when the darshan is saturated with dharmartha kama. Generally people make a mistake. Mistake means they make it very convenient. That is the wrong thing, you know. That becomes a contradiction. While pursuing dharmartha kama, you cannot pursue moksha. If you are pursuing moksha, then you don't pursue dharmartha kama. I am not suggesting you don't do dharma. There is dharma which is connected to artha kama. And there is a dharma which is connected to moksha, that is called atma dharma. So that atma dharma in a dharma in a wider sense you will follow. Even moksha is also dharma, it is called moksha dharma, you will follow. But the artha kama related dharma, has no more relevance in the person's life. And so that is moksha. Okay, now I want moksha. Now what should I do? Continue to be devoted to Sri Hari. Therefore, the devotion, bhakti, is as much relevant in moksha as it is in dharma artha kama. That is the idea. Therefore, whether you are an aspirant of dharma artha kama, or even better, an aspirant of moksha, the primary condition that you should satisfy is intense devotion to Ishvara. That is the statement. Here, Dhruva is he is pursuing artha. He is not pursuing a pleasure or any such thing. He is pursuing position, which is artha. And so, that is the main thing. But kama and dharma are connected with it. Therefore, he is in the context of trivarga, not moksha. But still, the devotion to Ishvara is the primary requisite. Tattata gaccha bhadrante yamunayastatam shuchi punyam madhuvanam yatra sannidhyam nityadaharehe. You see, Ishvara is everywhere. In fact, everywhere is in Ishvara, really speaking. All space is Ishvara. But if you want to worship Ishvara, then you better choose a place. Don't say all space is Ishvara. And you cannot worship, while sitting in the club, you cannot contemplate upon Ishvara. Because the ambience acts against it. In the beginning, once you become above all these considerations, and so your heart is now well established in the devotion to Ishvara, then the place, the time, etc. become irrelevant. They become redundant. But to begin with, a place has some relevance. The place should be inspiring enough for the devotion. The time must be the right kind of time for devotion. So, the place and time become important to begin with. So, Narada is advising a place. Dear son, he addresses, hey Tata, dear son, Gacha, please go. I bless you, Bhadrante. May all auspicious things happen to you. I advise you, go to the banks of River Yamuna. And there also, a place called Madhuvana, a forest, or simply a group of woods called Madhuvana, same as Vrindavana. It is called Madhuvana for a reason that it has trees with many sweet fruits. Also a lot of honey and other wonderful things are available in that forest. For that reason it is called Madhuvana. And then a lady, a devotee called Brunda, has come there later and performed great austerities and penance. And hence the place is known after her. It is called Vrindavana. So to begin with, it is Madhuvana. And so you go there, which is on the banks of Yamuna River. It is a very sacred place. And so you put your camp there. And wherever you are, there is Ishvara. But in Madhuvana, it is very easy to relate to Ishvara because the ambience is such that in every occasion, in every moment, the things around remind you of Ishvara. This is what is called Sannidhyam Nityada Hare. The sacred presence of Ishvara is there always. So it is like wind is everywhere. But you put a fan on. Then the wind, though it is everywhere, it becomes enjoyable to you. Similarly, Ishvara is everywhere, but you go to Madhuvana, make a camp or a small dwelling on the banks of River Yamuna, and then there you do penance. There every tree, the River Yamuna itself, and every article around, it will remind you of Ishvara. And so that is the best place that I recommend for your austerities. Now, Narada Maharshi is giving a program or a formula of austerities. So these are very useful. Some of these things can be emulated by us. That is the purpose of studying the text. So whatever is convenient for us. For example, now we need not to start going to Vrindavan. There is no forest left. Only some tree here, one tree here, one tree there. So it is all a human settlement now. And therefore, Yamuna river is also not very clean. It has become very dirty. The river is highly polluted. Therefore, the point is not running to Vrindavan and get then some real estate, then purchase a plot there or flat. It is not like that. So we have to take whatever is relevant to us in the present context, the place and time. You know, this may be relevant. Snapvanu savanam tasmin kalindya salile shive krupvochita ninivasam natmanah kalpitasanaha. So take a bath in the river Yamuna. So sacred bath, you know. Anusavanam. So three times a day. Savana, you know, the day is divided, the daytime, not night. The daytime is divided into three units. Pratasavana, the first quarter, not quarter, the first part, one third. Then Madhyandina Savana, the noon time. And Sayam Savana, the afternoon time, before the darkness of the night comes. So three, and take bath at all the three times. This is again tropical climate. So we take bath in the morning, and then people can take a shower in the evening also. In India we take a shower in the evening also, that is also included in the routine. And then he talks of a bath in the afternoon also. Some people, they do that. Why? Because so they do that. So for us maybe morning shower and or the evening shower. That is what it applies to us. And then the bath must be converted into a sacred bath. You see, people have to develop that spirituality in them. Bath is not for enjoyment. People convert everything into a sense pleasure. That spoils the ambience totally. Your home must be a place where you perform your penance, austerities. That must be the home. You convert the home, people do this mistake. They say we are all students of Vedanta and all that. That is all Yappi Vedanta, as I told you yesterday. It doesn't work like that. No surprise that it doesn't work. But all you need is, you make the bath into a sacred bath. It is not a bath meant for us pleasure. This is the interesting thing. People convert the bath into a pleasure. So make a swimming pool. And then just lie down there like that. And so what do you do? The body is very comfortable, very soothing it is. And then with the mind you go on thinking about the world. That is all you do. And so the mind goes into compulsive thinking and listless thinking. This is the chintanam, raga chintanam, dvesha chintanam, two things. Means compulsive thinking about things of attachment and also about things of aversion. That is the compulsive thinking. Then listless thinking, monorajya. Monorajya means they're thinking without a head and tail. Some kind of listless thinking. And so you are sitting in the swimming pool and thinking. What is that? It is the silliest thing to do. And so now all that should be avoided. So forget about the swimming pools and all that. Bath is a sacred bath. Water is a sacred. And so water should not be wasted. And water is not meant for the sense pleasure. Bath is not meant for sense pleasure. Bath is sacred bath. Therefore, Ganga is, now you need not run to India. So, you make the water like sacred. Ganga cha Yamune chaiva Godavari Saraswati Narmade Sindhu Kaveri Jaleshin Sannidhim Kuru. This is what we say. And then so in this water is taken in a bucket. So with a tumbler, you put the water on the head. That is the Indian way. If you don't want to do the Indian way, doesn't matter. You put the switch on, the lever on, and the water will come and fall on the head. Either way, it is okay. It doesn't make any difference. As long as you don't convert it into an occasion for sense pleasure. Is it the time for sense pleasure? Morning 5 o'clock, 5:30 or 6, you have to take a clean shower and sit and do meditation. That is the time and that is the occasion. It is not meant for sense pleasure. Oh, I had a nice, wonderful shower. What do you mean by that? It is not an occasion for nice, wonderful, enjoyable shower. It is an occasion for what? Meditation. And the meditation should begin not after the bath. Meditation should begin along with the bath. The devotion should begin along with the bath. You see, same water. This is the trick. Same water. You can make it a sense pleasure. That becomes a samsara. You can make it an article of devotion. That becomes the sacred bath. Same thing. You don't do anything other than that. You may still apply soap and all that. Whatever is hygienic that you should do. But it must be a sacred bath. So while taking bath, also I sincerely advise you, while taking bath, just take bath. Don't do anything else. Even thinking is an act. So don't think of anything else. It is difficult, but you should practice. Anyway, then Kalindyas Salile Shive, the sacred waters of Kalindi, Yamuna. So you take bath in those sacred waters. Then Krutvo Chitani, the daily routine will be there. You do all of the daily routine and live there. And then you do meditation. How to do meditation? Kalpita asana. So we are now into the sadhana. So you keep a small place for meditation. You need not construct a puja room and all that. This is not fashion. You know? Puja room, etc. It's not about fashion. Oh, we made a big home and we have a puja room. We have a guest room. We have this room, we have that room. God bless you, may all have all that. But that is not the point. The point is, you should make this the shrine of Ishvara constantly. Ishvara should dwell here all the time. So, you need not take to a life of sannyasa and all that. Sannyasis are not dwelling upon Ishvara all the time. They are more samsara than the real samsaris. So that is not the point. That is besides the point. The point is, you need to make the heart a shrine of Ishvara. So, how to make it? Meditation. So, how to do that? Fix a place for your meditation. Keep the same place till you progress in meditation to a point where you can do meditation even in a flight or even in journey till that stage comes. So, you have to follow certain basic disciplines of meditation. So fix a spot, like this spot, in one corner. You are not obstructed by anybody else, and anybody else won't obstruct you. Choose a corner, that is for meditation. And then put a mat there. That is the second point, that mat. Association will be there. By the time you go to that place and put that mat and sit in that posture, already the meditation is on. Need not make special effort. That is how association works. And therefore, never do meditation in the bedroom. Because bedroom is a bhoga place it is. So there the association doesn't help. So select a place. My kitchen is okay. I mean, if you have a bigger home, no problem. But in India, people live in one room. The family lives in two rooms. So now they cannot have a meditation room, this and that. Kitchen serves as bedroom. Daytime it is kitchen, nighttime it is bedroom. And in the morning and evening times it is the puja room. Kitchen serves all these purposes. Therefore it doesn't matter, you sit in a spot and reserved. Same spot, day after day. And then the same mat. And then the sitting posture. Kalpita asana, sukhasana. You should sit cross-legged. If you find it difficult to sit cross-legged, you should ask, why has it become difficult to sit cross-legged? Did you ever come across a cow or a bull which cannot sit? For whatever reason? So, why should we be any different from that? Suppose I say I cannot sit, what could be the reason? We have, in India we used to have, I don't know how it is going now, a bell-bottom pant. That is what it was. It is called bell-bottom pant. Very wide open. And then the opposite kind of pant, which is like a tube-like pant. And so these pants, some of them may be very inconvenient for sitting in meditation. So there is another thing called pyjama. That is best for meditation. Loose clothing. And then the waist also should not be tied with belt and all that. Some simple loose clothing. The clothing should not interfere with the posture. And then sit cross-legged. No, we find it difficult. You practice it. Practice it. Unless you have a very critical medical reason not to sit on the floor cross-legged. Which is all right, I suppose. But otherwise, you should sit cross-legged on the floor. That itself makes a big change in the person's body as well as mind. Anyway, you choose your convenience. So, first day may not be very convenient, very uncomfortable also it could be, but with practice it will come. And then sit straight. The Sukhasana, that is what we are doing in meditation in the morning. So sit straight. Kalpitasana. Pranayamena trivruta pranendriya manomalam shanair yudasya bhityayet manasa guruna gurum. Then having sit in a particular posture, sukhasana, then do pranayama. So you should do pranayama. And in the morning I have introduced this sectional breathing. So we have done breathing with the tummy breathing. With the using the tummy, we do breathing. And then tomorrow we will do the sectional breathing with the chest, using the chest. Now we don't use the tummy. Tummy won't move. My slight movement could be there, but mostly it is the chest. Chest movement means the chest expands horizontally and contracts. This much it won't expand, I am just showing. This part won't move, shoulders won't move, only chest. This is Buddha meditation. In a Chinese Buddha, you see belly, Chinese Buddha, right? It doesn't mean that Buddha was overeating and had a pot belly, no. That is not the meaning of Buddha doesn't overeat. He doesn't have a pot belly. It is symbolic. Chinese Buddha, in Chinese Buddhist, Tibetan and Chinese Buddhist meditation, the pranayama is done using the tummy. That is the meaning. When you breathe in fully, the tummy bulges out. That is the Chinese Buddha. He is advising you to do meditation, sectional breathing. And then Indian Buddha will find, you will find chest expanded. Sometimes what happens, the Chinese Buddha's tummy is very prominent. A little disproportionate with the rest of the body. But the message is, use the tummy for breathing in and out, watching the breath. Meditation. Pranayama is meditation. Because in pranayama, the mind is absorbed. He is saying that, so prana indriya manomalam. There is an impurity in the prana. What is the impurity? Shallow breathing. And then jerky breathing. What is the impurity? Like the entire surface area of the lungs is not put to good use. The inner, the lower lobe remains impure. Like the oxygen is not completely exchanged. And carbon dioxide is not completely thrown out, the lower part of the lung. And the upper part of the lung also remains the flow is not clean. It is not participating in the flow fully. And therefore, that also remains less well used. the intake of oxygen, etc., is less, upper and lower lobes. Only the middle portion, they say 75 to 80% of the lung surface alone is put to use. So we are wasting the lung surface. Bhagavan has given us more lung surface. So as you inhale deeply using the stomach or chest, the lower part of the lung surface is brought into the mainstream flow of air in and out. And so the Indian Buddha will have chest, tummy will be flat, but chest will be expanded. A little disproportionate again, chest, a little disproportionate. You feel, I mean, why the chest is unusually bigger? Again, the message is, do breathing with the chest. And then upper lobe breathing, shoulder breathing. We will do it 2 days for chest breathing, 2 days for shoulder breathing we will do. So the sectional breathing which I am teaching in the morning, you should practice it well. You should practice it for a length of time. When you do this sectional breathing, then it will be followed by sarala pranayama. That also we will do on the 7th day. So all this pranayama, when you practice it, so the impurities of the prana means breath, and that means incomplete, jerky, shallow breathing. Then indriya impurities means the impurities of ears, eyes, etc. And that means indriya impurity means always seeking sense pleasures, overeating, etc. So that is the indriya impurity. And then the manas impurity means excessive thinking, constant preoccupation with the things of the world. That is the mind's impurity. All these impurities are well taken care of by pranayama. And you should do it. So you should do it thrice a day, trivruta, morning, afternoon, evening. Okay, at least twice, morning, evening. At least once, morning. 10 minutes. 10 to 12 minutes. And then regular meditation. This is also meditation. So that has to be done. Shanair yudasya. All this has to be done shanai. So slowly and steadily. No hurry. Some people are over enthusiastic. They are called arambhashuraha. So they are very enthusiastic to begin in the beginning, and later all the enthusiasm it fizzles out. It should not happen like that. So so you should maintain that enthusiasm till the last breath in life. Till death you should maintain that enthusiasm, that determination, and a love. I love to do pranayama. Should be like that. It should not be an imposition, a self-imposed discipline. It should not be. To begin with, it could be like that. It is a self-imposed discipline to begin with, sitting and pranayama and all that. But eventually, you love to sit in the posture. You love to do pranayama. You love to do meditation. What else is there to do? What is there? Duniya mein kya rakha hai? You have to, phrase you should hold on to. Duniya mein kya rakha hai? What is there worthwhile in the world? You should ask that question quite often, so that spontaneously you feel there is nothing in the world worth pursuing. Leave it alone. Nobody will miss you. If you leave the world alone, nobody will miss you. So, do your duty in the world and then remain with yourself. You see, there was a gentleman. He went to a doctor and paid the fees and got the prescription. Then he went to the druggist, paid money, got the medicine. Then he came home and threw the medicine through the window, out. Then somebody asked him, why do you throw the medicine away? He said, I want to live in peace. That's why he threw the medicine away. Just a joke, not a very right joke, I suppose. Doctors are there. They have started, I have to finish, you know. So then why did you purchase the medicine in the first place? The druggist has to live. Why did you go to the doctor for prescription? The doctor has to live. Then why did you throw away the medicine? I have to live. The idea is, I take a simple message from it. That is, just deal with the world on that basis. Kaam to chalna hai. So go to the market and bring some vegetables and other things and put it in the kitchen. Why? Because something has to go on in the kitchen. And so food you eat, why are you eating food? Your body has to keep alive. As long as it is alive, you have to feed it. And then you smile. Why are you smiling? Okay, greet the other people, let them be happy. So like that, just dutiful. Do your duties and now you are done with the world. You don't need the world anymore. So that kind of shanaihi, slowly one has to grow to that level. Not abruptly. Okay, I will do pranayama half an hour. You cannot sustain it like that. It becomes a self-imposition, painful. So it should not be a pain. You should always make it a point that you make it slow and steady. You see, even the class, when we take class, we start at the right time and stop at the right time. You know why? Because suppose you expect the class to start at 7:15 and you come by 7:10 and I start at 7:30 and I delay it up to 9, suppose, or 9:15, and so you go home late. Next day before coming to the class, all these ideas will be there. The guy may not start at the right time, so let us go slowly. Or, my goodness, if I go to the class, will I be able to come back in the right time? No, I may not be able to come back because I have some urgent work at 9:30. I will as well miss it. Okay, today we will skip the class. We will see tomorrow. So it happens like that. On the other hand, if you are assured the class begins and ends, then you can plan. You now know. Because of the class, you are not going to lose anything. You now know it. So you won't skip the class. This is the beauty of a discipline. So meditation also, you should keep such a discipline. And you won't, so that you won't miss it. If you make it too long and too harsh on yourself, you will be able to do it for 5 days, 6 days, and then you will start missing it. Therefore, it must be done in a very disciplined way, and slowly and steadily. This is the race, you know, between a tortoise and a rabbit. And tortoise wins the race. Tortoise wins the race. The rabbit loses it. So don't be like a rabbit. Be like tortoise. And stay the course. Shanaihi yudasya. And all the impurities will go away. Not in a day, not in a week, not in a month. But in a few months, you become free. And so pranayama's benefits are marvelous. Then come to manas. Manasa guruna gurum. So the mind must be very pure, a steady mind. Guruna manasa means a steady mind. With a steady mind, guru. Guru means the father of the universe. Sri Hari. Whatever name you give to it, the father of the universe, the higher power which is commanding our lives. So that Sri Hari, so you contemplate upon Ishvara. So there are many ways of contemplating. So you can chant a mantra, you can chant Omkara, or even the discriminative meditation, discrimination between the self and non-self is equal to worship of Ishvara, mental worship of Ishvara. So learn the meditation well, and you can as well use the guided meditation. So do meditation, day after day, without fail, do meditation. You see, meditation people have to do. You see, the orange, if you look at it, the skin is bitter, but inside the skin, there is the sweet fruit. Similarly, the body perishes, perishable. It is unreal, and it is non-self, perishable. Inside the body, inside the mind, there is the Godness, Godhood. The God Himself is about the divinity. You see, God is not a person. If God is a person, he must be living somewhere, not in my heart. How a person can live in my heart? So, God is not a person. God is the impersonal reality. That's why it can live in every heart like space. God is space-like. So, that divinity within, that is the highest goal of life. Like the bitter skin of the fruit contains the sweetest part of the fruit within. Similarly, that divinity is within you. And the only way to reach that divinity is through meditation. Meditation is a free transport to divinity. If you want to go on a pilgrimage, you have to pay money to the transport people, to the bus, to the car, and then the temple people also say, you pay the ticket. Once I went to a Shiva temple, so going to have the darshan of Lord Shiva, he told, ticket. What ticket? What ticket? Shiva temple ticket kya hai bhai? Shiva to hamara Bhagwan hai. Sadhu log, Shiva is what ticket you are asking a sadhu? Sadhu or anybody? What ticket? No, no, 5 rupees you have to pay, then only you can have. Who are you? Who are you? Ticket, what ticket are you talking about? No, no, that is the rule. Okay, I don't want your Shiva. I took that vibhuti and put on my face and came out. One beggar is sitting there. I gave the 5 rupees to the beggar. He is the Shiva. What is this ticket business? He is not a cinema for ticket. Anyway, what it is, free transport, you have to pay ticket and all that. Ticket. I went to Tirupati. So, again, ticket. No ticket. What is the ticket business? No ticket. Either you allow me to go or I don't go. That's all. No ticket. So, one need not be like that. So the point is free transport to Ishvara. Free transport. Meditation is the free transport to the inner divinity. So one has to do meditation.
Japyascha paramo guhyashruyatam me nrupatmaja yam saptaratram prapatham puman pasyati khecharan. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
That is the mantra. Now he says, there is one of the greatest of the mantras. And that mantra I am giving to you. Already Narada Maharshi is initiating Dhruva into this mantra. And now what you do is, you contemplate upon this mantra. So that is the meditation. And you carefully listen to me. You contemplate upon this mantra. If a person contemplates for 7 days, saptaratram, ratra stands for a day, like Navaratri, Sharat Navaratri, how many, they do only nights or days? Days. Sharat Navaratri means 9 days. Not 9 to 12, 76 hours, no, not like that, 108 hours, not like that. 9 Ratri means 9 days. Starting from 1st to 9th. The word Ratri is used, but it means full day. Similarly, Saptaratra means not 7 nights alone, 7 into 12, 84 hours. It's not like that. 7 full days. The word Ratri stands for a day. Anyway, so, Yam Saptaratram, if you contemplate upon this mantra for 7 days, you will experience that divinity within you certainly. Without fail, you will experience the divinity within you. And so, you take this mantra and chant it regularly, continuously. That is the advice given by Narada to Dhruva. And now, he initiates Dhruva into the mantra. You may say, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That is the mantra. Now, the mantra meditation is of two kinds. One is japa, dhyana. Another is next higher stage of dhyana. Both are dhyana only. So in one kind of dhyana, you constantly chant the mantra. And you may chant it not loudly. louder chanting is less efficacious than chanting with him. The lips may move, because chanting with the mind, entirely with the mind, becomes difficult, at least to begin with. Therefore, the movement of lips makes the chant a little more complete, to begin with. So instead of entirely saying with the mind, with practice you can do, but suppose you add the support of the lips, a little movement of the lips, which you alone know, that will be making the chant very complete and very satisfactory. You feel good, okay, I have chanted one time, chanted one more time like that. With the mind, the chant is so fickle to begin with that you don't feel like you have chanted. Therefore, to begin with, you just add the support of the lips. It is called upamshu japam. Means a silent chanting. Silent means not 100% silent. 99% silent. 1% sound is there within you. This is the upamshu japa. So you do this japa. And in this upamshu japa, use mala. So that the count is also there. And that is a discipline. And now how much japam? So 1200,000. That is the japa. 1200,000. Lakh, what they call lakh. L-A-K-H. Lakh. That is 100,000. Or 0.1 million. That is 1 lakh. So 12 aksharas are there, 12 syllables are there. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So 1 plus 2 plus 4 plus 5. So 7 plus 5, 12. So this is what is called Dvadasha Akshara Mahamantra. So the purpose of counting the syllables is this much. You can keep that as a target, like 1.2 million is the target. It takes a few months. The idea is you will stay with it for a few months. A long discipline it is. And so that completes the mantra. What is called purascharanam, that is how they call it. Means in the spiritual life, the very important first step is called purascharanam. And so you do that mantra 1.2 million times with a mala. Take a mala which has 108 beads, and then this mala is there in every culture. It has come from India only. Mala means India. Other people adopt it, which is fine. So, the mala you do 108 times. And count it as 100. 8 is just a little extra, so that you don't miss the count. So even if you have missed one bead in between, it is taken care. So 108 taken as 100. So this is the mala. The mala should be held with this hand. I don't have a mala. I don't have mala anymore. I gave up mala. I used to carry mala for some time. So somebody has taken away. I have given away my mala. So you may hold on to your mala for some time. And so the mala, they don't touch with this finger. They put this finger so upright so that it won't come anywhere near. Because don't touch the fingers. Why? Don't touch it. Why? Because the index finger is the ego finger. So we don't want spiritual ego to now come. That I have done this much japa, I have done that much japa. I am now growing into spirituality, this, that should not be there. Therefore this finger is ego finger. Because in spirituality, the ego is sublated. You transcend the ego. Whereas in religiosity, the ego is remain, it keeps strong. Ego remains strong. Karta. Ego is the karta. That is the strong ego. Whereas in spirituality, it is atma, which is the akarta and abhokta. Therefore, this is part of spirituality. Therefore, ego must be sublated. And so, they keep the finger away. So, they hold the mala. And then, you draw the mala towards you, not away from you. Towards you. And keep the mala at the height of the heart.
దీస్ ఆర్ సమ్ ఆఫ్ ది డిసిప్లిన్స్ విచ్ దే డూ అండ్ సో అండ్ దెన్ డూ వన్ మాల. Try to keep the focus on the mantra. How to do that? The mind wanders away and the mantra japa becomes mechanical. So you have to find, this is how the mind has to be trained. So what you do is, so you chant and you listen to it. Chant and you listen. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So now I am chanting and I am listening. Mind cannot go anywhere. It cannot go. And then be conscious of the silence between the two chants. Now mind is tied. It just can't go away. Unless you skip one or two of them. Still it can go away, but bring back. Don't condemn the mind. Don't make the mind into an enemy. Mind should not be made into an enemy. It should be understood that mind is basically very fickle. Chanchalam hi manah pa Krishna. Very fickle. Even Krishna supports that. Yes, chalam. He doesn't say chanchalam, but he says chalam. Chanchalam means chalam, chalam. Ativa chalam, chanchalam. Just chalam, chalam. So, mind is chalam. But abhyasena cha kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate. Therefore, you do, this is the abhyasa. So you have abhyasa. Go on doing the mantra japam. And then forget about the world. What is there in the world? Duniya mein kya rakha hai? You remember that. Vairagya. Abhyasa, vairagya. Over. And mind comes into your command. Once the mind is in your command, a treasure of ananda, infinite happiness is waiting for you there. You don't lose anything. By keeping the world away, you don't lose anything. So, it is not a bad bargain, it is a very good bargain. Because you don't lose anything. You will only give up all the stress, all the worry, insecurity, fear, and all those things are gone. So, this is how the mantra has to be done. Then, the meaning of the mantra you should know. So you should not remain ignorant. Once you have done the mantra up to a point, a stage comes when the counting drops away. The counting is no more relevant. All these things happen spontaneously. There is no when. There is no when. It just happens. Spontaneously, you find that you don't need the counting anymore. So, randi mundukochi kurchondi. Randi ikkada kavalsinanta chotunna. Okay. Nilapadi vintara? Okay. Now you can occupy that seat. Yeah. Meer nilapadite naaku kaalu nuppi pudtayi, meer kurchondi. Anyway, so the mantra, as you practice it again and again, some of the things, they drop off. So which is all right. When it is dropping off, when you are done with the counting, then let it drop off. Ganita is gone. Now there is only mantra, and your love for the mantra is there. You don't count anymore. So it is like you give money to the children by counting. Count and give. Because otherwise if you give a lot of money, you will be spoiled. You count and give. And then a stage comes, okay, Dad, I want money. What is there? You take all of it. When I want, I will ask you. You take all of it. How much? Whatever is there, you count yourself, take all of it. So anyway, so Ishvara also counting is there to begin with, but later no counting. Okay, having said that, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, the meaning. The first syllable is Om. Om is the most sacred sound. Most sacred sound. Om. You see, it is not a language. It is a sound that doesn't belong to any particular language. You see, sounds are of two types. Varna and Dhvani. Varna means a syllable, means a word, a language. That is one kind of a sound. When we speak, that is the sound. Now I am speaking, that is Varna. But there is another sound, which is a Dhvani. Not Varna, Dhvani. Like, suppose somebody is going, you make a sound, and his attention is drawn. You smile, he comes near, you ask him to come near. So this sound, it is universal. Everybody will understand that sound. It is not a language sound, it is universal sound. Suppose you smile, ha ha ha. That is universal. It is not of a given language. Suppose you say, exclamation, aha, wah, it's a sound. And that sound everybody understands. Suppose you say, ayyo, everybody understands. It is not a language. Alas, alas may be language, but then there are certain sounds which are not belonging to any language. Generally, to express love, you may not use language. You may use a sound which is not language. Suppose you want to convey love to the cat. What will you do? You make a sound, whatever sound that is, that conveys the message to the cat. It understands. It understands. And it reciprocates also in its own way. A dog, and I am not suggesting you keep a pet and all that, just I am saying it is possible to make a sound. And even with children, suppose a child in the cradle, you don't talk a language with the child in the cradle. The mother doesn't speak language. The language the child doesn't understand. But the mother's certain sounds made by the mother, the child understands that very well. So, the varna is language. Dhvani is universal. Now, om is not language. It is not Sanskrit language. If you say Sanskrit language, then it belongs to a small tribe of people who know Sanskrit, which is a very small tribe, in fact. Even among Hindus, many people don't know Sanskrit. Therefore, it is not language. It is universal sound. It is the nature's sound. Om. Nature is beyond all languages. When the wind is blowing, you can hear Om in that sound. When the cuckoo, in the spring season, spring or autumn? Okay, spring. When the cuckoo in the spring, it makes the sound. Out of joy, it opens up, and then it makes a marvelous sound. It adjusts the throat a little and then makes the sound. Kuhu dhvani. It is called kuhu. That is how it makes the sound. That is om. There is om in it. Elements of om in it. So the child makes the sound. Ah, 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 like that. There are elements of om in that child's sound. The nature's sounds. You have to listen to the nature's sounds. Stop listening some of the artificial sounds for a while. Go into the woods and just listen to the nature's sounds. Watch nature's movements like birds, the branches of the trees moving in the wind, and the trees, the leaves falling and making a sound, very minute sound, and then the breeze making a sound in the tops of the trees, top branches, etc. And then the sounds of animals and birds, those sounds you listen. You will find the elements of om in all those sounds. So it is the nature's sound. It is the cosmic sound. It is the sound of divinity. And also it is the sound which leads to silence. Every other sound, like a word, word creates more words. Speech creates more speech. Whereas the sound om, it comes at a point when all thought ends and all speech ends. You say Om. You merge into silence. Suppose your mind is agitated, then you sit in a sit in the meditation posture and say, take a deep breath and say, Om. The mind becomes so silent. Very sacred sound. It has a lot of meaning in it. Very sacred sound. Really, this Om, it appears as Amen. Amen came from Om. Generally, in this context, I tell an example. A Purohit, he went to London. Where does Purohits also go to London? And once he goes to London, now he comes back to India. While going to London, he was wearing a dhoti, the Indian style of dress, and an uttariyam like this. But coming from London, he is wearing a t-shirt, or a t-shirt, or there is another kind of shirt. So, bush shirt, yeah. So, and then a pant. And he was, while going from India, he had all clean shaven, but a tuft of hair behind. But now you have to search for the tuft of hair while he returns. It is all hairstyle, what we call cropping. I don't know whether it is an English word or Telugu word. It is called cropping. Or maybe it is a crop. So there is a hairstyle. And the tuft of hair, he is a Purohit, you know. He is supposed to have some tuft of hair here. He cannot be totally without it. And therefore he keeps, it is hidden. And you have to search for it, it is there. This is how he came back. Same person. But came with a lot of change in the attire. Similarly, this Om, it went to London. And now the Om came back. Now it is not Om anymore. It is Amen. Amen is Om. A little change, like our Purohit has changed the attire. Similarly, this Om has changed the attire a little. A little more here, a little less there. And now it is Amen. And even in Islam, at the end of the prayer, they say Amin. That is also Om. And once they say Amen, what will happen? Silence. Similarly, Om. So, that is the glory of Om. Then what is the meaning of Om? Every word, every sound, now Om is a sound, you know. It is a sound. It is not a word anymore. It is not a language. It is a sound. You see, it is a sound symbol. Like you hear I was walking and suddenly I heard a sound. I knew that an automobile stopped behind me and I turned back. The automobile was there. How did I know? Sound. The automobile, it is coming, and then it is braking, and it is coming to a standstill. All this, I could I could know. While it is happening behind me, I am not seeing any of it. But that sound, you know. You see, sometimes the sound can be so potent, so powerful. Some of the people who don't see, blind people, they know the person by sound. And the father is, suppose the young man is blind, unfortunately. So the father is coming, he knows father is coming. Mother is coming, he knows mother is coming. There is a change in the footsteps, the quality of the footsteps, etc. And a dog is coming, he knows it. A cat is coming, he knows it. So the sound faculty is so tuned and so refined that he can know what it is. So a sound can signal the thing. That is how sound acts. It can signal the thing. Even in our day-to-day interactions, so shall I go to the movie? Mm-hmm. No. Shall I go to the college? Mm. yes, whatever sound signals. Similarly, this sound om, it signals. Signals means what? The sound makes the mind fixed on that. Suppose I am thinking something, then suddenly I hear the sound, oh, a car is behind me, I know. So the mind has become now car-like. Car thought happened in the mind. That is what happens by the sound. Similarly, when you understand it correctly, and when you hear the sound, oh, whether you hear it, or you say it yourself, or both, the mind is now totally resolved, and it is resolved in the vision of Ishvara, a higher power. Therefore, Om is the name, a sound symbol, more than a name means language, a sound symbol, symbol of what? Of the higher power called Ishvara. Om. Obviously, Om is not the Saguna Ishvara, it is Nirguna, because it is the sound symbol of a higher power, which is nameless and formless, no name and form for that higher power. And that higher power, which has no name and form, is indicated by, is signaled by the sound Om. It is the name of the nameless Ishvara, that is Om. Now, that Ishvara, so Bhagavate Vasudevaya Namaha, that is the meaning of Om. Name, it is the sound symbol of the nameless and formless Ishvara. Now you can, having said that, now Ishvara can be Saguna. From Om, which is Nirguna, it becomes a Saguna. It is like you purchase gold. It is Nirguna. Now you make it into a necklace and put it in the neck, that is Saguna. So, gold in itself cannot be worn, cannot be used as a decoration, as an ornament. It has to be made into a shape, then only it can be made into an ornament. Similarly, the upasana, the worship, the mental worship of Ishvara becomes possible when the Nirguna is made into Saguna. Let it, you allow it to manifest into the Saguna. That is the next part of the mantra. So, Namaha. Namaha means I prostrate unto. To say that, Ishvara must be Saguna. Therefore, the Nirguna Ishvara is now manifesting as the Saguna Ishvara who is worshipped by the devotee. So, we will come to Namaha. But before coming to Namaha, so, Vasudevaya, Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The very superficial meaning is the revered, Bhagavate means revered, Vasudevaya, Shri Krishna. Vasudeva means the son of Vasudeva. So that is Shri Krishna. So I prostrate unto the revered Shri Krishna, son of Vasudeva. That is the meaning. Very superficial meaning. But then, we are not talking of son of Vasudeva alone. Shri Krishna is all right, but the son of Vasudeva is understood. But then there is a higher meaning to that. Vasudeva. Vasudeva. Vasu is the Sat. Sat, the being. Deva is the chit, the knowing. This is Vedanta Dindima class, what we were discussing in the morning. In the last 2 days, two classes we have done. The two classes, only one topic, Sat Chit, that is the topic. So, Vasu Deva. You see, suppose you are looking at the world. Now, when you are looking at the world, you assume that these are all so many names and forms. That is how we assume. We also assume that the names and forms are outside. The names and forms are not outside. Outside, what is And the name and form is what is superimposed by the mind. So this you have to understand. Suppose you have a flower, rose. When you say, this is rose, when you say, this is rose, I suggest to you, you understand, rose is what the mind superimposed upon the thing which is the being, the eyesight, senses the being. And then the mind adds a name and form to that. Like for example, I sense a soft cloth. I sense what is. I sense what is. And the mind gives the name soft cloth. Right? I sense what is. And the mind makes it, interprets the sensation of the being as a soft cloth. So I sense what is, and the mind interprets it as mind. Therefore, when you say, this is a rose, in that, a rose is coming from the mind. Then what is that? Is what it is. Isness is what it is. Rose is the interpretation of the mind. You got this point? Now if you got this point, then the whole universe is the just the being. It is just the being. Because everything is sensed as is. This is, this is, this is. Mind adds the name and form. This is a photo. This is a cup. This is a book. This is Mike. Mind adds the name and form. And minus the name and form, it is the isness, the being. Another name, another word is the presence. Presence. Something is present. Something is present. Means what? What am I sensing now? Presence. Oh, this is a photo. That is the mind. Okay? Oh, presence, presence. What is the, what I sense the presence. And now, oh, cup, that is mind. Presence is a spontaneous, instant it is. Cup is added later. Oh, somebody is coming, a human being. Human being, which is again being. Oh, he is my brother-in-law, that is mind. Being. Like that. So a bird is flying. A being it is. But then it is a being, then a bird, and then a osprey, another. There is all mind. It doesn't say I am osprey. It doesn't say I am osprey. You say it is osprey. And so it is the being. A flying being. A flying being. You say it is the bird, and then you say it is the osprey bird. It is the being. Therefore, whatever you are relating to is, if you can keep the name and form aside, it is the being. And that being, that presence, is Vasu, Ishvara. That is Ishvara, that presence. So, suppose you close the eyes and you feel the space all around you. That space. The space, what is it? Is it not a presence? It's a presence. The space. Then underneath your feet are touching the floor. It is a presence. What is that presence? The name given to the presence is Prithivi. Prithivi is the name given to the presence. It is like photo is the name given to the presence. So Akasha is the name given to the vast presence. Prithivi, name given to the presence. How do you know the presence? The touch. So presence is called Prithivi. Then wind is blowing. It is presence. Again it is presence. And the name given by the mind is wind. Heat, you sense the heat, it is the presence. Name given by the mind is fire. It is all the presence. Water, water is the name given. It is the presence. Water is the name given. It is that presence. And the presence has got a name. The name is Shri Krishna. That is the name of the presence. That is what God is. So, Sri Krishna says this much in Gita, Param Bhavam Sajanantaha. So, that presence, which is all pervasive, which is all, and you say pot, pot is the name and form of the presence. And you say fire, it is the name and form of the presence. You look at the sky and say, oh, moon. Say moon. You tell me, is it moon or is it presence? Presence. The presence. But in a when the mind interprets that, oh, this is night time, therefore it is halfway and also curved, therefore the mother told him that it is the moon, therefore he says moon. Right? Suppose mother did not tell him anything, then still he will see the presence, he will sense the presence. But only thing is, he will not say moon. Presence is there. That is presence. Even sun is also the same. Sun is what? My God, what a presence it is. But S-U-N, sun, is the name given by the mind. So keep the names and forms away. They are the interpretations of the mind. The mind is habituated to name them like that. The name and form is not the truth. The presence is the truth. That presence. And that presence is called Vasu. That is the ground of this entire creation. That is the ground, the presence is the ground of Prithivi, Vayu, Akasha, Agni, Apaha, Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, Suvarloka, that for every loka, for all the Panchabhutas, for every object of this entire universe, for all the animals, for all the humans, for all the birds, for every creature, the ground is that presence. And that presence is Sri Krishna. That presence is Vasu. And what kind of presence it is? The presence which is self-shining. To see the name and form, you need the mind and the senses. But I feel the presence, the space. It is self-evident, the chaitanyam it is. It is there in every living being, that chaitanyam. That chaitanyam, the presence is self-evident. So, when you say part, it is outside, name and form. You need a mind, and you need senses, and you need a language to describe it. But if it is not about part, it is just the presence. Now you feel the presence. Suppose you close the eyes and feel the presence of space. Now, are you not the same presence? You are the same presence. And how that presence is making itself evident? No mind, no senses, but it is evident. I can feel the presence. What is, how it is making itself evident? It makes itself evident by itself because it is the evidence itself. The presence is the evidence. The Sat is the Chit. That is Deva. Deva means self-shining. Vasudeva. That is the God. That is the Bhagavan. So that is the God. The Bhagavan word we will see tomorrow. Om Purnamada 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 Chyate Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Hari Om.